Hi, Matt here. We're excited to celebrate a milestone. Think Fast, Talk Smart is approaching our 300th episode. To mark the occasion, I'll be hosting two free Ask Matt Anything events on June 3rd at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. Pacific. We'll run these on LinkedIn and YouTube, open to everyone around the globe. Before taking your questions, I'll share one of my favorite new communication structures for advancing ideas and arguments. Anyone joining can submit questions online during the event, and a few of our learning community members will have the opportunity to ask me their questions live on video. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of this live AMA on June 3rd. Be sure to sign up on LinkedIn, YouTube, or fastersmarter.io/live. Now a word from one of our sponsors. Their support covers the cost of production, allowing us to bring you quality content free of charge. Language isn't just about words. It's about connection, opportunity, and credibility. That's one reason I like Babbel. It focuses on real-world communication, not just vocabulary drills, but practical conversations you can actually use, whether that's collaborating internationally, traveling for work, or building relationships across cultures. The lessons are short, about 10 minutes, so they fit into busy schedules, and they're designed by more than 200 language experts with tools for listening, speaking, reading, and writing. It adapts to how you learn and helps you track real progress over time. For many of our listeners, whether you're strengthening English skills, adding another language for professional growth, or staying connected globally, it's a practical way to keep moving forward. Babbel has over 25 million subscriptions sold worldwide, offers 14 languages, and every course comes with a 14-day money-back guarantee. If you've ever thought about learning another language, this is a perfect opportunity to start. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 60% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS for up to 60% off. Rules and restrictions apply. Communication is a vivid, visceral experience, a true connection between you and the other person. I'm Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Today, I'm excited to speak with Alan Alda. Alan is an acclaimed actor, writer, and director. He is also the founder of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science at Stony Brook University, where he has dedicated his efforts to helping scientists and health professionals communicate more effectively with the public. He is the author of several books, including his latest on communication, If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? And finally, he hosts an awesome podcast called Clear and Vivid. Alan, thank you for being with me today. I so look forward to our conversation.
I do too, Matt. Thank you. Thanks for talking with me.
Yeah. Shall we get started?
Yeah. Let's go.
Excellent. So you've dedicated a large part of your career to helping technical, scientific folks communicate more clearly. Can you share with us what drives that energy and passion for this topic?
Well, I'm passionate personally to know more about the way the universe works. And that means scientists explaining to me in terms I can understand it. Science can't do its work unless it gets funded. And it can't get funded if people don't understand what the scientists are trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish. And that means they have to really understand what's going on in the minds of the policymakers, the public, so they can feel comfortable funding it, but also so they have the ability to caution the scientists about concerns they have that are ethical. But you can only raise a question if you understand what the basic stuff is about.
So you were motivated, it sounds like, out of your own curiosity, but the real driver is to help these very technical scientific people be able to communicate in a way that those of us who have less knowledge can better understand what it is they're doing. And you've highlighted a really important topic that we've heard many times on this podcast, which is it really boils down to understanding your audience and the way you speak to politicians, the way you speak to the lay public, the way you speak to colleagues in a different discipline has to be different based on your appreciation of what they know and what they don't know.
And you have to do some work to find out what they do know and what they're interested in, how they understand certain things. You know, there was a landmark meeting of nanoscientists and neuroscientists when President Obama brought together a group to work on the brain. I've been told by several people who were actually in the room that they argued for hours, the neuroscientists and nanoscientists, about the meaning of one word, the word probe. It meant something to each group in a different way. So it can be very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to the words we use. And often people will use lots of jargon and terminology that people don't understand, or maybe a word that everybody understands, but they understand it to mean something differently. Which leads to my second question. I have seen you often talk about communication pitfalls and mistakes people make, such as jargon and assumptions. What strategies do you recommend and teach for avoiding these issues and ensuring that our messages are accessible for everyone?
The way you get an understanding of other people, I don't think is through tips. At the Center for Communicating Science, we put people through experiential learning. We use exercises drawn from the study of improvisation, for instance, not to get the scientists able to make things up on their feet, but the experience that's much more central to improvisation, which is connecting to another person, to being aware of what their face is telling you, what their body language, what their tone of voice is telling you, and to speak to that, to make that connection. For me, the difference between tips and experience is really, it's a vast difference. For instance, there's an example that kind of lingers in my mind is there's a speed sign in the country near where I live, and it says 20 miles an hour. And I routinely have gone past that at 40 miles an hour until I was stopped by a policeman and given a ticket. The speed sign is the tip. The ticket is the experience.
I appreciate the analogy. I would love for you then to share with us perhaps a specific experience that you helped these scientists work through so that they can learn that, how to read a room. And what I hear you saying, the core essence of avoiding these pitfalls is really being other-focused and not self-focused. It's really thinking about how the message is landing and observing that. What kind of activities and exercises and experiences do you put these folks through to help them develop that skill?
One of the most basic things we do is mirroring. For instance, you would be my mirror, and every move I make would be mirrored by you in real time with no echo.
Mirroring is a phenomenon that I'm very familiar with, and it's one where you mimic the other person, and the activity you're doing requires to be very present-oriented and to be very other-oriented so that you can be in that moment. And what it does is it opens up the aperture, if you will, to paying attention to a lot of things that many of us, when we communicate, we just don't see. We're just so wrapped up in saying what we want to say. So it truly is an experience that people can learn from and sensitize themselves to those other folks. In your teaching and most recent book, you discussed the importance of clarity and vividness in communication. Why are these so important, and what advice or guidance do you have for enhancing clarity and vividness?
I think clarity is really important, clarity and vividness, and that's why I call my podcast Clear and Vivid. Vividness is important because that's how things stick in the mind. You know, I'm fond of that story about the speed sign and the ticket because it's visual. You see the idea visually.
Vividness is very important, and I certainly see how vividness and clarity together can really help someone absorb the information that you're communicating. Do you have reflections on reflection about communication? Do you encourage people to think about what worked and what didn't?
I do, and I do it myself. I'm very, very interested in watching a YouTube of two people talking, or two people at a dinner table, and judging where they're on the rails and where they go off the rails. And it's when they're not connecting with one another. And what you get is two dueling monologues. And each monologue is mainly interesting to the person making it. And the other one is waiting for the cue that now it's their turn to talk and generally stay on topic, but not necessarily.
Right. So a conversation is not just turn-taking monologues. There's a connection there. What have you found helps bring that connection about? I'll use an example. When you and I did not know each other before we started this, but when we started, before we hit record, I felt that you did a few things to help connect to us. You connected through a common experience that I thought brought us closer together through a third shared experience that we both had.
I think I did do that deliberately, maybe not consciously, But I do that at the beginning of every conversation that I do on the podcast. And we've done 300 of them or more so far. And I always feel the first few seconds are very important to establish that we're just two folks talking. Because everybody needs to get a little relaxed. When I was a young actor, I'd be nervous on opening night. I'd hear the roar of the crowd through the house curtain, and I'd think, they're here to judge me. And then I began to get the awareness, finally, that they paid money to come see the show to have a good time. And I thought, all I have to do is what I know how to do, and they'll probably have a good time. And not only got relaxed, I got eager to see them, eager to be among them.
The last point that you made, I think, is critical for all of us to understand. It is, I believe, and those of us who study communication and anxiety that goes with communication, believe that we are being judged when we communicate, but how we frame that judging. In your case, as an actor who people were paying to come see you perform, they wanted to be there. And in most cases, when people present in a meeting or at a conference, people are choosing to be there. They're not coming there saying, I want to judge this person presenting. They're there to learn or to have an experience that you get to contribute to. And by reframing that in much the way it sounds like you did, it can change your whole approach. Instead of something that is one where you have to be defensive and guarded, you can actually embrace that connection and that offering that you have to make. And I think that's really fundamental in helping people feel more confident.
And that feeling of confidence leads to something else that you might not have expected, which is, well, it brings the real you out. There's nothing more engaging than the real you, not the prepared you, not the rehearsed you, not the you that's wondering if your tie is straight or is there a smudge on your coat. You know, it's who you really are in your openness, in your weakness, and in your strength. And to allow yourself to do that, and you can only do it through connection, in my opinion, through accepting the presence of the other person and respecting that presence. When you have that, then you let you out. And if you're talking with another person, it lets the other person's person out as well.
It certainly is a virtuous cycle. And that's where I think the paralysis of anxiety and concern blocks that from happening. And if we can move ourselves beyond the insecurity and the doubt, then we can allow that to come out, as you should happen for you. It strikes me that in the latter part of your career, you've gone from speaking words, maybe words that you wrote or others wrote, to asking lots of questions. Do you have advice and guidance on how to ask good questions to get good answers and good connection? You interview for your podcast. I know you do a lot with scientists. What makes for a good question?
I think really wanting to know, really being curious. If you want something interesting to come out of the person, ask that person the question you really want the answer to. It's not, tell me about chapter one, now tell me about chapter two.
I would be delighted if you asked me a question that you're curious about either our conversation or the things that get talked about on this podcast.
I am curious to know how you started getting into this, because it's something that's interior to our souls more than it is something like the mechanics of a car.
I grew up as a son of a teacher, an elementary school teacher, and a lawyer. My mother was very creative, and her language was very flowery, and it was all about engagement. I mean, she was teaching fourth graders. And my father, on the other hand, was a lawyer, and it was very regimented and had to be structured and concise and clear. And I remember watching their communication patterns and being fascinated by it. When I was about 7 or 8, my mother got very frustrated with my brother and me for all the toys and tchotchkes we had around. And she said, we're having a garage sale. And I grew up in a community, Alan, where there were lots of garage sales. And my mother said, we need to make sure our garage sale signs stand out because otherwise nobody will see it. So she had us insert a B in the middle of the word garage, which made it a garbage sale, not a garage sale. And we sold more stuff that weekend than anybody in our whole neighborhood. And my mother to this day thinks it's because our sign stood out. I think people thought we were stupid. But my point is, I learned at that age that words, that language can actually change behavior. And ever since then, I've been fascinated by it. Went to school, graduate school, studied it, and now have the pleasure of teaching it. And that's really where I think my origin comes from.
How old were you at the garage sale?
7 or 8. I can still remember the toys she made me sell.
That's great. But talk about being vivid. To put the bee in the garage sign is really eye-catching.
Yeah, I want to come back to this notion of what makes for a good story, because you have told several stories and vividness is clear. Are you strategically thinking as you're telling your stories about inserting vividness, or is it just something that you do naturally? Because not everybody is an equally good storyteller. I think you can learn to be a better storyteller. How conscious or unconscious is it for you personally?
I think a lot of it has become unconscious, become the way I talk. But good storytelling goes back to Aristotle. And although he talked about what made the story on the stage work, how a play works best, I really think it applies to almost every kind of communication where there's a story involved, where somebody is trying to achieve something, something gets in the way, and they have to overcome that obstacle to get what they want. And for me, the joke is that if they get what they want, it's a comedy. If they fail to get what they want, it's a tragedy. But that idea of being in motion, being in action, you can identify with the person. I tell a story about myself and I encounter something like the cop giving me a ticket. I think I'm the hero of that story for a while. I don't want the ticket and I don't like having learned the lesson, but I got it now.
Right. What I hear in that answer is that there's a structure to story and you then hang on that structure, vivid description, personal experience, revealing information, disclosure, and that's what makes for a successful story. I think having a structure is really important.
You brought up in my mind something that I do deliberately, which is being aware that the person I'm talking to is probably saying to themselves at some point, why is he telling me all this? So unless I know that a memory that I have associated with the story, unless I know that it is connected to the punchline, I leave it out. I don't give every detail I remember happened. When people tell stories, it's seductive. You're reminded of elements. I was in Grand Central Station. I was going to visit my brother, but he wasn't going to be there because he was on vacation. Who cares? It's not connected to the point you're making.
Right. My mother has this saying, tell the time, don't build the clock.
That's good. She's a good teacher.
Yes, but I think what you're highlighting there is a lot of us add detail. We build the clock that's not necessary to be built.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, a quick word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you this show free of charge. When things get busy, and they always do, the real challenge is focus. Knowing where to spend your time so you actually make meaningful progress. But that's hard when you're trying to do everything yourself. That's where Upwork can help. Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across areas like marketing, development, data and analytics, and more. It gives you fast access to specialized talent so you can move quickly, fill key gaps, and keep your work moving forward without getting stuck. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping your project so you can hire with confidence and get started faster. And if speed really matters, you can connect with top-tier talent and get matched in under 6 hours. It's a simple way to maintain momentum and focus on what matters most. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. If you think about it, a lot of our communication challenges at work aren't about what we say. They're about what never gets clearly shared in the first place, especially as teams grow and change. Processes live in people's heads, explanations vary, and over time, that leads to confusion and inconsistency. This is exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500, Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures what you're doing in real time and automatically turns it into clear, step-by-step guides. No recording, no manual write-ups. So instead of adding one more task to your to-do list, you can just do your work knowing it's being documented for others. As our team has grown, we've spent a lot of time walking people through onboarding, tool transitions, and cross-team workflows. And the reality is, we're often just too busy to stop and properly document all of it. With Scribe, you just turn on the extension, go through the process, and it builds the guide as you go. Something that might take hours or get pushed aside entirely now takes seconds. It also automatically redacts sensitive information so you can share confidently across teams, contractors, and new hires. And anyone following along gets real-time on-screen guidance. So the message isn't just sent, it's actually understood and applied. And what I really appreciate is that Scribe doesn't just document your processes. It helps you improve them by showing you where things could be more consistent, more efficient, and easier to hand off. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/thinkfast. That's scribe.how/thinkfast. And now, back to our conversation.
Well, Alan, before we end, I like to ask three questions of everybody. One I create just for you, and the other two I ask all the guests who've ever been on the show. Are you up for answering these?
Sure.
So my first question, just for you, you are quite an accomplished communicator and somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about communication. I think you and I both agree that we can always get better in our communication. What is one area of your communication that you're working on to improve?
I work probably every day, most of the day, on being able to really listen to the other person. But you can't learn it well enough. There's always more to learn, and there's always more, a new way to realize that if you do that, you're listening better.
I tried my best to listen to what you said, and I would agree that listening is a great skill to work on. Question number two, who is a communicator that you admire and why?
Two guys, Brian Greene and Stephen Strogatz, because they love physics and mathematics. They really love it, and they really love helping you understand it. There's no fakery about it. Let me see if I can find a way to say this, that you have the same excitement about it that I do. And I really admire that in both of them.
So it sounds like some authenticity and passion for getting the information across is key there. My third and final question for you. What are the first three ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
Connecting, communicating, and clarity. And the thing about all three of them is that they're all based on hearing what the other person is really saying, really getting inside the person's head, letting the person be real to you, accepting them, letting them in.
That notion of accepting and having the person be real to you, I think, is really powerful. I thought you were going to say the three things they all have in common is they start with the letter C. And that's true, too. Alan, it has been a true delight to speak with you, talking to somebody who has spent the time you have reflecting on what makes for effective communication is beneficial for me and hopefully for all of our listeners. The idea of being vivid, being clear, and being connected are essential for communication and for furthering the goals that we have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Matt. I enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more about connecting with your audience when communicating, please listen to episode 82 with Nancy Duarte. And to learn more about becoming a better listener, please check out episode 117 with Julian Treasure. This episode was produced by Jenny Luna, Ryan Campos, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder. With thanks to Podium Podcast Company. Please check us out on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter.
Before we wrap up, I just want to say thank you for listening. It really means a lot to hear how people all over the world are using these ideas in their own lives. It inspires me and the whole team that brings you this show. If you want more episodes and resources, feel free to follow, subscribe, and explore past conversations. We're grateful for your support of Think Fast, Talk Smart.